What do you think of when I say the word wilderness? Perhaps you envision snow-capped mountains, roaring rivers, or herds of caribou moving across the tundra. But do you think of expansive deserts, or the rolling prairies, or even bug-filled swamps? Well, all of these things are, in fact, found in wilderness areas in the U.S., even though they may not immediately come to mind when you envision wilderness. Through time, the word wilderness has meant many things to many people. And there are many misconceptions about what wilderness is and what it isn't. Today, I'm going to be talking about the history and reality of wilderness. Specifically, I'm going to be talking about lands that are designated as wilderness by an act of Congress. In the United States, there are 757 such wilderness areas, totaling almost 110 million acres. These wilderness areas encompass swamps and prairies and islands and forests and tundra, though they make up only about 5% of the total area of the United States. I'm sure it comes as no surprise to hear that over half of all the area designated as wilderness is found right here in Alaska. Considering how much wilderness area is found in Alaska, I figured it would be a good idea to talk about it a bit more in depth. So that's why I'm here today. This is Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Anna Peterson, and I'm a wilderness fellow for Togiak and Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuges. As is true with many things in life, I think in order to better understand something, it's always a good idea to start at the beginning. So buckle up and prepare yourself for a bit of a history lesson. I promise I'll try not to make it too painful, but I think it's very interesting and important to understand how the idea of wilderness has changed over time in the U.S. The idea of wilderness has played an important role in American history, and the perspectives on wilderness have shifted a lot through the years. Way back when, in the early 1600s, European settlers described wilderness as a dark and dismal place where all sorts of animals dash about uncooked. Back then, many people viewed wilderness as a threatening place, a place where dark and frightening beasts lurked, ready to kill. As European settlers began to move west, views of wilderness also began to shift. During this westward expansion, many people began to view wilderness not as something threatening, but instead as something that could be conquered and used for their own benefit. However, even then, there were also people who appreciated these wild places for their beauty. In 1860, Lord Byron wrote in a poem, "There's pleasure in the pathless woods. There's rapture on the lonely shore. There's society where none intrudes. I love not man the less, but nature more." Unfortunately, most people only saw the forests and the shores as places from which to extract wealth. Settlements began to dot the landscape, and people began to take and take, assuming that the earth would always have enough to give back. Frontiers were explored and conquered, and in not all that much time, there was little land left untamed. A fear of losing these places spurred some people into writing more than just poetry. Activists began to fight for legislation that would protect and conserve wild places from human development. Theodore Roosevelt was one of the first presidents who set aside large tracts of lands for protection, and in 1903 created the first National Wildlife Refuge in Florida at Pelican Island. However, around this time, the automobile also began to become more popular, and soon everyone wanted to drive across the United States. Then, even more land was cleared to make room for roads. One early and important conservationist named Aldo Leopold wrote during this time, "This country has been swinging the hammer of development so long and so hard that it has forgotten the anvil of wilderness which gave value and significance to its labors. The momentum of our blows is so unprecedented that the remaining remnant of wilderness will be pounded into road dust long before we find out its values." He felt very strongly that humans were destroying a valuable resource that we would not be able to get back. And so, along with other important conservationists like Arthur Carhart and Bob Marshall, they fought hard to protect the land from increasing development and were successful in establishing a few local wilderness areas. However, because these areas were designated by a local agency, it wasn't that hard for these areas to lose their protection. The next head of an agency could just come on in and decide to take away a land's protection. So there were many conservationists who felt like this wasn't good enough. And in steps a guy named Howard Zahnheiser. Is anyone out there still listening? I'm all the way up to the 1950s now, and I'm talking about the guy who is responsible for writing the official Wilderness Act. Finally, I'm getting around to the whole point of the show. So this guy, Howard Zahnheiser, worked very hard for the Forest Service for a number of years, and during that time he was heavily influenced by other conservationists like those other guys I just mentioned, Arthur Carhart and Bob Marshall, and Aldo Leopold. He said, "We have a profound, a fundamental need for areas of wilderness, a need that is not only recreational, but spiritual, educational, scientific, essential to a true understanding of ourselves, our culture, our own natures, and our place in all nature. It is a need that any modern man may know, whether his residence is urban, suburban, or rural. He felt so strongly that there needed to be protected wilderness areas that he made it his mission to establish official legislation to protect wilderness areas across the U.S. He also believed that his plan should protect wilderness areas for the long term, rather than have wilderness areas subject to the whims of changing land managers as it has been had been up to that point. He decided the best way to do this would be to have wilderness areas designated by Congress. If the designation of a wilderness was done by Congress, this would mean that only an act of Congress could take away the special wilderness designation. This essentially ensured that once designated, a wilderness would stay wilderness forever. Getting people to buy his idea wasn't easy, though. It took Howard Zonheiser 16 years to convince politicians that he wasn't crazy. He even had a coat specially made with extra huge pockets inside so that he could always have books and pamphlets and information available to hand out to anyone who he thought might listen. Then, in 1964, almost 50 years ago, the Wilderness Act was finally passed in a near unanimous vote in Congress. The U.S. became the first country to establish a law that would offer near complete protection to some of the most natural and undisturbed places in America. So, now I'm back to my original question. What is this wilderness? As defined by the Wilderness Act, passed in 1964, a wilderness, in contrast to those areas where man and his works dominate the landscape, is hereby recognized as an area where the earth and its community of life are untrammeled by man, where man himself is a visitor who does not remain. An area of wilderness is further defined to be an area of undeveloped federal land retaining its primeval character and influence without permanent improvements or human habitation, which is protected and managed so as to preserve its natural conditions, which generally appears to have been affected primarily by the forces of nature, with the imprint of man's work substantially unnoticeable. The purpose of wilderness is not to exclude people. As right in the Wilderness Act, it also says that wilderness should have outstanding opportunities for solitude or primitive and unconfined type of recreation. So what does this all actually mean? Well, when an area is designated as wilderness, it is essentially the highest protection that a land can get. Not all federal lands are wilderness. National forests, national parks, and even national wildlife refuges are not protected in the same ways that wilderness areas are. Though some of these areas might have a section inside them that are designated as wilderness, which is the case with the Togiak and Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuges in this area. In most designated wilderness areas, roads, buildings, installations, and mechanical transport are not allowed. In Alaska, though, there are some special provisions that allow for additional activities in wilderness. For example, snow machines, which are allowed in wilderness areas in Alaska, but not in wilderness in the lower 48. So, now that you know all about wilderness, what can you do to help protect this valuable resource? First and foremost, if you find yourself in a wilderness area, be sure to take a step back, breathe in the fresh, clean air, enjoy the view of the lake or the river or the especially crooked tree, and maybe take a moment to realize how great it is to be able to enjoy an unrestricted view of a mountain peak rather than a parking lot. Then, when you leave that place, try and leave it the same or maybe even better than you found it. Take your trash with you. Even take the trash that someone else left behind with you. In general, do your very best to minimize the impact you have on the environment while you are there. Then, as you leave the wilderness behind, imagine how great it would be if we could all try to leave all of the places we visit the same or better than we found them. Because, as Lyndon B. Johnson said when he signed the Wilderness Act, if future generations are to remember us with gratitude rather than contempt, we must leave them something more than the miracles of technology. We must leave them a glimpse of the world as it was in the beginning, not just after we got through with it. If you are interested in learning more about wilderness, visit wilderness.net, which has a lot of great resources about wilderness. It also has information about books written by many of the people that were integral to the establishment of the Wilderness Act. For Field Notes, I'm Anna Peterson. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided by Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.